Hi everyone, I'm Jason Scorse and welcome to another episode of Dispatch from the Zombie Apocalypse. I hope everybody is doing great on this midterm election special. When they go low, we go high. Election Day special. This is the first midterm election since I started this podcast the week that President Trump was inaugurated. So it's been a quick 2 years, but I think it's been a good 2 years in terms of the stuff that's been covered, and I'm feeling pretty good about keeping this going at least for a couple more years to see if America can regain its sanity. So I want to first start out by saying I am not making any predictions about the outcome of this election, and you might be listening to this days or weeks after the election. So there'll be plenty of time to talk about what happened and what's going to happen because of that. I will end the episode with a little discussion of what might happen if the Democrats take the House and or Senate. And I want to start here with a few notes on Michelle Obama's famous slogan, you know, when they go low, we go high. I think I'm going to devote a whole episode to that in the coming months, because I think there's a lot to unpack in there and a lot that might be nuanced and subtle that's worth discussing. But on the basic substance here, I really want to just fully agree with Michelle's statement here, right? The Republican Party and Donald Trump is debasing this country on a basically minute-by-minute basis, just propelling us into the gutter of lies and white supremacy and theocracy and cruelty and inhumanity. And we don't ever want to mimic that. And the beautiful thing is we don't need to. And I will revisit that in another part of this episode about why we really don't need to go where they go, that we can win keeping the moral high ground. But before I get into that, I just want to talk a little bit about partisanship on this election day and be really clear here that I am partisan in an extreme way, as you probably have gathered if you listen to any of the episodes of this podcast, but I'm a partisan in an extreme way to values and issues and facts, not the tribal political identity. I couldn't care less about individual Democrats or the Democratic Party. The only reason I am so strongly in favor of them is because of the values and ideas they represent, and because the Republican Party is inhumane and insane. So the point being here is, you know, I'm sure there would, if a conservative would listen to me or listen to this podcast, would say, you're just a partisan Democrat. And let me just say to anyone out there, conservative, Republican, Democrat, liberal, independent, I would love more than almost anything to one day be able to come on this podcast and say, wow, the GOP is sane and not racist and is not suppressing votes and is fully engaged in the democratic process, and the fever has broken and they are good faith actors who want to talk about issues from a conservative perspective and govern America and address American problems in a truth-based, fact-based manner. Nothing would make me more happy. I would love to one day be able to say, you know what? I think in this election, the values that we care about, a Republican is better to vote for than a Democrat in said election. I would love that. That would mean we have two sane, reasonable parties working on the issues. The reality is that we don't have that because of the Republicans. It's not because of the Democrats. The Republicans are not good faith actors, and that's why we can't have these nice things. But that's the tell for me here, right? Is that my wish is to be able to say positive things about Republicans. The point here is though, they have to stop being insane for me to stop calling them insane. They have to stop being racist for me to stop calling them racist. They have to stop acting cruel for me to stop calling them out for acting cruel, right? My calling them out is in response to their actions. And they need to stop those actions and become productive citizens in order for me to change my tune here. And let me just also end this part here on the fact that I would save a lot of money and time if the GOP weren't so evil, right? I mean, I'm pretty good about not getting bogged down in the news. I'm not on social media. So I'm not, you know, one of these people that's in a rage all day because the Republican Party is so crazy. But still, I've spent a reasonable amount of time reading the news, listening, and doing things like this podcast where half the time I'm just calling out their insanity. I would love to use that time doing something else, whether it was gardening or writing a book or surfing or working on a business idea. But unfortunately, because the Republicans are so craven, some of my time has to be devoted to keeping abreast of their latest lunacy. And the same thing goes monetarily. Given the fact that the Republicans unchecked, you know, want to go all freaking Dr. Seuss Lorax on us and just plunder the entire planet and leave it a smoking pile of rubble, I have to spend a considerable amount of my money donating to environmental groups that are trying to sue them and keep them in check. That's money could be better spent on myself or other charities. So the point being is I don't benefit from the GOP being so evil. It's not, I don't get off on this. I don't have any tribal loyalty to the Democrats that's so strong that I just want the Republicans to continue to be evil because I get some kind of satisfaction of calling them out. That's just not who I am. That's not what this podcast is. But again, as long as they are craven and evil, we need someone to hold them to account and call them out. And that's one of the services that I'm doing with this podcast. But it's not my preference. I just really want to make that clear. It's not my preference. And so the other thing I try to do with this podcast is to be more affirmative and talk about good things and how we can focus on the positive and productive. And so after the break, I'll talk a little bit more about that in the context of the midterms.
So why'd you have to rain on my parade? I'm shaking my head and locking the gates. This is why we can't have nice.
Okay, so I want to get into some more positive and productive aspects of this kind of midpoint in the Trump presidency that these midterm elections represent. But the first thing we have to just recognize is that these are pretty dark days for our country, right? The Trump administration has in many ways exceeded my expectations for cruelty, insanity, and just the overall debasement of our nation. I'm not surprised at all by this. And the reason is, long ago, I realized there is no low on the right, right? The right will not stop debasing this country, undermining this country's values, lying continually until they are stopped, right? They're not going to just do it on their own. And as long as they have power, they are going to just keep sinking lower and lower. There is no bottom. And that's a pretty horrible position to be in, because as much as I'm going to try to make a few silver linings here. We can't be cavalier about this darkness, right? There are real people getting hurt. There are incredibly devastating environmental consequences. There's just hundreds of billions being thrown out in madness, military spending, and healthcare being undercut. So it's about as dark as you would expect when a white supremacist lunatic is elected president of the United States. But on to the constructive, there is something liberating about this moment in two ways. The first is that the right wing has been exposed, right? We have full clarity now. There's no ambiguity. I don't really think there was ambiguity 5, 10 years ago, even 15, 20, but it was hidden enough that you really had to be pretty well-versed in politics and you had to be pretty attuned to the news and the language to really get the full extent of the depravity of the right wing. But now it's fully exposed, right? If you don't see that the right wing and the Republican Party is intellectually and morally bankrupt, you're never going to see that, right? So it's as clear as day, and there is no real reason that we need to delve into that. On the flip side, what is nice about this moment, though, is that they need to lie and cheat in order to win, right? All the voter suppression efforts, all the just black is white, up is down, they can't put forth an honest, true agenda, hope that they get more than 50% of the votes and promote voting rights equally and win. They know they can't. We have a political party and a movement that knows that it has to lie. It doesn't have confidence in its values. They can't come out and say, we really believe white men should stay dominant in America. We really believe corporations should run amok and pollute the environment and no one should have health care because that's just the way the market works. That's their true values. That's what they actually do, but they can't say it. Even just saying it out loud for 30 seconds, you realize how crazy it is, even though that is their values. And so the liberating aspect of that is that our side doesn't need to lie. I can stand up with a right winger, a Republican, in any forum and fully articulate my values and my positions on any issue, even contentious issues like gay marriage, abortion, drug policy, immigration. I have full confidence, not that everything I believe is right, not that I have full certainty in all the details, not that I, you know, I'm fully aware of all the unintended consequences, but that I am confident in my values and my overall policy positions, and I'm coming to them with a fact-based, good faith effort. And the beauty is that ultimately that will likely win, and the Republicans can't match it. I'm gonna do a future episode on how to expose right-wingers, and if you get into discussions and debate them, and it's really not that difficult. If you have confidence in yourself and what you believe, it's easy to expose them because they can't put forth what they believe. They have to obfuscate and lie because they know what they believe is so vastly unpopular. On top of that, the math here is simple, right? The reason Trump and the GOP are in power is not difficult to understand. It's actually quite simple. And putting them into the dustbin of history isn't going to be difficult either, if all sane, decent people come together to elect Democrats and, where needed, maybe some independents. It's just simple math. And so, yes, the American system of democracy is rigged. It's founded on white supremacy. It tilts the playing field to small, rural white states. Yes, a black man who, to be president, has to be the best, has to be an almost perfect politician, while white men who are two-bit thugs and grifters and who really should be on street corners, you know, shouting from cardboard boxes with a cup in their hand and drooling, they can become president. Or a C student who's daddy's boy and an alcoholic and a draft dodger can become president, while people of color, again, need to be the best that they can be to be taken seriously. That is all true. America is an incredibly corrupt and unequal society and a really compromised democracy. But even with that, there is enough trace of democratic rule left in the U.S. that if we, the people, demand something better, that this is not what we want, we can make it happen. If America descends further into madness and fascism, it is because we, the people of goodwill, let it happen. The government reflects the body politic. It reflects our better nature and the darkness and the most debased elements. So it is up to us to keep the dark side in check through the power of the vote. This is not rocket science. And this is, by the way, why the next Democratic administration, I believe, needs to make voting rights the number one legislative priority. I will talk about this in future episodes, and I'm working hard to get this on the Democratic platform and in the Democratic Party's, you know, key priorities. And expanding the franchise, expanding voting rights has to be part of this movement going forward. So anyway, I think, you know, it's a lot of responsibility realizing that the fate of the country is in our hands, but that's what it means to be a responsible citizen. So after the break, I'll talk a little bit about what might happen if the Democrats take the House and or the Senate. Looking out for black and white dark days in the summer. A million ways to toe the line. Can't wait. Holy other. Might as well be the seventh sign. Okay, so to wrap things up here, I want to talk a little bit about the potential changes in the government if the Democrats take the House or Senate. The House is obviously looking like the most likely, and if that happens, the main benefit I think that will come from that is the investigative powers. I have been working to make sure that Devin Nunes, who is a congressman near me in Fresno, California, is defeated. He is a traitor, straight up traitor, and he was recently caught posing pictures with full-on white supremacists. And so he is just the worst of the worst. He is the guy that needs to crawl back under the rock where he came from. He is the chair of the House Intelligence Committee. He has been blocking real investigations and is on tape saying that it's more important to protect the president than to get to the truth and respect the rule of law, and hence why he is a traitor. If he is defeated and the Democrats take the House, Adam Schiff will become the House Intelligence Committee chair, and he is a true hero. He will be relentless in exposing the Trump administration's incredible corruption and treason. And this will be an incredibly powerful position to have, and I think will bring a lot of good and transparency to finally a real investigative body letting the public know just how corrupt the Trump administration is. Now, of course, Trump will fight back hard against that because, you know, they are getting into some deep financial crimes of his family and his family's business. And my prediction is, I will throw one prediction out there, not about the election, but that after Trump becomes a citizen again, whether through impeachment, through his defeat in 2 years, or even in 6 years, he will spend the rest of his days sued and will likely end his days broke and or in jail. And that is because his business is a criminal enterprise. It has been since it was founded by his father. And he could kind of skate by when he was just under the radar. He was a small bit player in New York real estate. And as much as he is a criminal, it was the type of crimes that, you know, white collar crimes that aren't really investigated in the United States. Now that he's president, he is getting the scrutiny that he would have never gotten, and his crimes will be exposed. And so he will be feeling like a cornered, caged animal, and that could get quite ugly. That being said, I could also see him responding by trying to cut deals with Democrats to try to show that he's a deal maker and try to deflect attention away from the investigations. This might put Democrats in a difficult position because they won't want to be seen as not trying to make deals and do what's right for the country, and yet they don't want to empower the president, especially in the lead up to the 2020 election. My guess is the administration is so evil and so corrupt that the deals won't be good enough, that they will be things that they can't turn away, and so it won't be that much of a problem, but we will see. The Senate, which is a much tougher climb to get, but is still within the realm of the possible. I've been working on Beto O'Rourke's campaign, and I really hope that he unseats probably the most evil senator in Ted Cruz. If the Democrats get the Senate, what obviously that does is it prevents Trump from being able to pick any more Supreme Court justices or at least get them confirmed. He can certainly pick them. And it also puts a brake on all these other judicial nominees. And so this would be huge. This even might be more important than getting the House back, even though it's a lot more difficult. But the map is incredibly tough, and we'll just have to see how that goes. That being said, I do want to take a moment to talk about the judiciary. The right wing has been, you know, really focused on getting a right-wing judiciary. And again, because they know they can't win elections fair and square, so they need right-wing hacks to gut voting rights and allow them to gerrymander. And so that's been a program of theirs for 30 years. The Democrats have not taken this issue seriously enough. And I'm hoping with the Brett Kavanaugh debacle and the fact that now it's clear that the Supreme Court is just another politicized institution, that the Democrats will start realizing how important it is to focus on this. And the way to get your judicial nominees is to get control of the Senate. You know, just one last pet peeve here. You know, when the 2016 election came, I could not believe that Hillary and Obama and the Democrats weren't making more of a noise about how it was our chance to get a liberal Supreme Court for the first time in 50 years. I mean, the fact that we blew that we had Antonin Scalia's seat and that we couldn't use that to rally people to get a fifth justice who could have come forward with, you know, stuff to overturn Citizens United and promote voting rights and gay rights and workers' rights and environmental rights. I mean, that liberals didn't understand what was at stake is really a travesty. And so I'm hoping that at least with the politicization of the Supreme Court, which, by the way, has been a political body for decades, the notion that it's somehow, you know, umpires and balls and strikes is just absolute nonsense. The right-wing justices just make up arguments completely out of whole cloth. They contradict themselves, you know, continually, and they're just another arm of the right-wing hack machine. I'll do a whole episode on that in the future, really going through some of their most egregious rulings, showing how this has nothing to do with the Constitution, but just promoting right-wing power at all costs. So hopefully the Democrats now realize the power of the judiciary, and we will have a much more of a focus on the Senate going forward. So just to end this episode, the antidote here is quite simple, as you might imagine, which is no matter what, vote in every election until the day you die from here on out. This is just the minimum qualifications of basic citizenship. I think you should do more than vote. I think you should contribute to candidates, work on campaigns, write articles, op-eds, do a podcast, whatever. But the absolute minimum is to just show up and vote every single time, no matter what. No matter if you're, you know, you just moved and you don't have a new registration, or you're traveling and you need, you know, absentee, whatever it is, go out there and vote, because the government is us and we are the government. So with that, everybody, I hope these midterms go for the same team, and we will debrief at a later date. So if you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and Stitcher. Recommend to your family, friends, and colleagues, and have a great rest of the week, everybody. Take care. Do you want to dance? Or do you want to run? We all don't.
and count it out. Your vote is worth counting. Come on and vote for your favorite thing.
The group with the most votes wins.
Think that you wanna steal
or do